Big finish for Haydn's Symphony No. 90. Franz Bruggen led the orchestra of the 18th century.
This is WHFR Dearborn, beautiful classical programming presented to you each and every day right here on our non-commercial independent station, WHFR. We've got so many other exciting activities and events that we'd love to share with you. We would welcome you to become part of our WHFR loyal listener group. Simply give me a call, Susan McGraw, WHFR General Manager, at 313-845-9842, and I will be happy to put you on our free WHFR mailing list. Again, the telephone number is 313-845-9842. If you have comments, suggestions, requests, and anything of that nature, additionally, you might like to call me and let's chat about it. We're always open to new ideas and love to hear feedback of what you're enjoying here at WHFR and also ways that we might improve to bring this beautiful music your way. So don't hesitate to call me today. Love to hear from you, and we're very thankful that you're a part of our WHFR loyal listeners.
You're listening to 89.3 WHFR Dearborn, non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College.
Morning. You are listening to Then and Now, presented on WHFR Dearborn from 10 to 11 a.m. and the fourth Saturday of every month as a part of the WHFR Forum, our weekly talk show format. Then and Now is a pre-recorded program on WHFR at 89.3 FM, Making Waves, that primarily deals with how history affects current events. And now to our host, Ned Apigian, with today's program. Ned?
Thank you, Melissa. Well, welcome this morning to our monthly program, and our guest today is Dr. Aspet Kochikyan, and this is his biography, which will attest to the fact that he knows what he's talking about, and I'll tell you what we're going to talk about. And what we're going to talk about this morning is the history of the Georgians, and recently we've had a conflict with the Russians and the Georgians, and people will not know what that's all about. And you'll get a better understanding as to the reasons for it when we go into the history of the Georgian people and the various stages of their history, so you can see why what happens today is affected by what happened in the past. And our lecturer today, or the person we're going to interview, is Dr. Aspet Kochikyan, who is a lecturer in political science at Bentley University. Before joining Bentley, he was the Assistant Director of International Affairs Program at Florida State University in Tallahassee, Florida. His PhD dissertation, Boston University, 2006, is entitled Dialectics of Small States, Foreign Policy Making in the South Caucasus, dealt with foreign policy issues that small states, specifically Armenia and Georgia, face. Dr. Kochikyan has taught courses in Eurasian and Middle Eastern politics at Hobart and William Smith Colleges in New York, Boston University, and Wheaton College in Massachusetts. In 2002, he was a visiting lecturer in political science and international relations at local universities in Armenia and in Georgia, located in the Caucasus, of course, where he also conducted research for his dissertation. During the 10 years, Dr. Kochikyan has also traveled extensively and lived in the Middle East, Iran, Lebanon, and Syria. He has written, lectured, organized conferences, and delivered presentations on topics such as the foreign policies of small and weak states, national identity, and regional developments in the Middle East and Eurasia within academic and public venues in the South Caucasus, Middle East, U.S., and Europe. His field of study is the development of foreign policies of small and weak states with a focus on the South Caucasus and the Middle East. He has also conducted research on questions of identity and transformation of transnational diasporic groups. Dr. Kochikyan has published articles and book chapters in various media, among which Demokratia, Insight Turkey and Central Asia and the Caucasus. He is currently the editor of the journal called Armenian Review. Dr. Kochikyan, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much, Ned. I'm glad to be here.
And it's a pleasure for us to have you. We try to have people elucidate us on issues that the average person doesn't know. First of all, to our listening audience, I'd like to remind you that this is a pre-recorded program and you cannot call in. This program will be heard on the fourth Saturday of the month of December.
January,
I'm sorry. Now, when we talk about Georgia, listeners, we're not talking about Georgia down in Dixie. We want to make that clear. We're talking about Georgia, which is an independent republic, one of the three in the Caucasus regions in the former Soviet republic of the former Soviet republics of Armenia and Azerbaijan, and they used to be part of the Soviet Union, and after 1991 became separate republics as the Soviet Union broke up. Today's topic we're going to break up into four sections. The first section is going to be that Dr. Kochikyan will kind of illustrate to us who are the Georgians, something about their background, their history, their culture, their religion, so on and so forth. So Dr. Kochikyan, I leave that up to you. I will try not to interrupt you unless I have a question about where would you like to begin with who are the Georgians in the Caucasus?
The Genesis, the book of Genesis?
The book of Genesis.
No, I'll try. I'm a political scientist, as you kindly mentioned in your introduction, Ned.
Yes.
And I deal with modern issues, but you're absolutely right when about the show itself, the meaning of the show itself. It's very difficult to understand political issues nowadays without looking at the past. Of course, the ancient past might not have any direct relation with what's happening today, but the recent past, I'm talking about 18th, 19th century and onwards, definitely highlights, once we talk about it, we'll highlight more about what is the current situation is like. In a nutshell, I mean, depending on how much time we have, about 10, 15 minutes to give a history of a whole people, ethnic group, would not do them justice. But the Georgians as a people, they have been living in that part of the world since 6th, 7th century B.C. So they are very much of an indigenous people. They are an amalgam or they were made by the fusion of various tribes. And we call them Georgians because of various reasons. I mean, it's not Georgia per se, as you mentioned. A lot of people get confused about when we talk about Georgia and the Russians invaded Georgia, people in Atlanta were panicking. But historically, they've had different names as well. For instance, the Romans called the Georgians Iberia, the Caucasian Iberia, which also is the name for what is now Spain at the time. And the Georgians themselves, they call their land Sakartvelo. They call themselves Georgians in Georgian languages, Kartvelebi, and their language is Kartuli. Now, the problem when we're talking about Georgians is that sometimes, or more often than not, you'll pronounce names or you're going to say names which are completely unpronounceable for non-native speakers. I'm being
sure.
One. So you have to imagine with some of the names. Historically, there have been many, many tribes living in what is now today Georgia. And over a period of time, some of these tribes merged, and eventually they formed what is now today the Georgian nation. Of course, there's a very tiny nuance here, which people don't understand, and some of them amplify it, is that when we're talking about the Georgians, we need to also keep in mind that there are sub-ethnic groups within Georgia, which for all practical purposes, they are considered to be Georgians, but they have a different dialect and different tradition. Some of these people would be the Mingrelians. If some of our listeners would remember, I'm sure you would have come across this net as well, but Beria, Stalin's henchman, the KGB times, he was a Georgian from Mingrelia as well. Some of the others would be the Laz, L-A-Z, and the Svans. These are sub-ethnic groups of the Georgians, where by early first century or so, they have been formed different kingdoms. And Georgians actually converted to Christianity in fourth century, in about 320 A.D. It was around that time that the Georgians became the second, what they claim to be the second nation in the world.
Not much longer after the Armenians, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. But again, this is more of a mythology rather than, you know, any actual fact in terms of saying who was the first nation and so on. It's always you can dissect that and appropriate that to whatever you think is the best.
Culturally, are they more like Armenians or more like Russians or Kazakhs? Or
no, the Georgians are a Caucasian people. They're not Slavs. Mm-hmm. Their language belongs to the Caucasian language branch, which is an Indo-European branch of languages.
Right. The Armenian is, you know, Aryan languages.
It is an Indo-European language closer to the Persian language. This is one of the other things that the Ossetians, for instance, their language is actually a branch within the Iranian language. So they're very close to the Iranian language than the Georgians. But the Georgians is perhaps... the Georgian people and the Georgian language is perhaps the largest group within the Caucasian languages. Abkhaz is another, you know, you have all of the North Caucasian languages, the Chechens and so on and so forth.
Would you say the Abkhazians and the Ossetians, which you have to define, are their languages similar to Georgian or are they completely different? Because that's the
Abkhazian
root.
Is similar.
Yeah, because that's the root of their political problems today. Two of those groups, they're either primarily Muslim and the Georgians aren't. So that's another reason for their conflict, I imagine.
That's actually one interesting point that you raised, Ned, that religion, which became a defining factor for many groups in that part of the world, it doesn't seem to be that much of an issue when defining the Georgians. Because at the end of the day, you have Muslim Georgians. During the 16th, 17th century or earlier when the Ottoman Empire and the Safavid Persians invaded southern parts of Georgia, many Georgians converted to Islam. And the remnants of those or the descendants of those are the ones who what now today we call them Ajars in an independent area within Georgia.
Yeah, one of the problems with Georgia, as I understand it, now that you're describing these various smaller factions, unlike Armenia, that's about 98% Armenia, I understand Georgians are probably only somewhere between 40 to 60% of the population Georgian, and the other groups are made up of these factions that are close to them ethnically. Is that right?
According to the last census taken by the Soviet Union in 1989, Georgians made up about 66% of the population in Georgia. The father of the Russian or the Soviet hydrogen bomb, Andrei Sakharov, who later became a human rights activist, he had a saying where he said Georgia is an empire in and by itself because it has all these smaller groups or a mosaic of nations. You're absolutely right. According to the 1989 census, which a lot of people consider to be the most reliable one, Georgians made about 66%. The Abkhaz actually didn't make that much of a large percentage of the population.
But they're a major part of the problem, the political problem, the Abkhaz. How about the Ossetians?
The Ossetians, about 5%. There were about 8 to 9% Armenians, about a similar amount of Azeris in Georgia, and then, of course, Russians, Greeks, Poles, you name it.
I thought the Armenians were the largest faction in Georgia. Apparently not.
Not anymore. They used to be.
They used to be. Okay. Yes. I see. So could you dwell, since the root of this problem deals with the Abkhazians and the Ossetians, because they've carved out little areas of which the Russians ended up protecting and the Georgians ended up violating, which we're going to talk at the end of the program. Right. How did they get their distinctive differences in order to be the root cause of these problems?
Well, the thing is that both the Abkhaz and the Ossetians, they had their independent kingdoms. And up until the 10th century or so, Georgia had, about 9th century actually, in Georgia, what is not today Georgia, there were various kingdoms. There was a kingdom of Western Georgia, and which was called Colchis, or Colchis, C-O-L-C-H-I-S. And then there were the kingdom of Kartli, which was in the east, and so on. And Abkhazia was a kingdom in and by itself. So it wasn't until the 9th century when a dynasty, which is Bakradioni dynasty, Pakraduni Bakradid dynasty, was able to unify all of these under a single king.
And that's a Persian root, isn't it?
The Bakradioni, actually, I wouldn't be able to tell you for sure, but I know there was an Armenian branch.
I was going to say, there's an Armenian dynasty with that same root.
Exactly.
Name.
They were cousins. And this is the interesting thing. I find it fascinating that before the age of nations and nationalism, people didn't identify themselves as nations. It didn't make any difference if the ruler was a Bakradioni from Armenia or from Georgia. The ruler was a dynastic sort of affiliation rather than ethnic affiliation. But it was about that time that the whole area came under a single rule. And it continued up until the 19th century.
Now, okay, let's take a moment here to identify ourselves. We're 15 minutes into the program. You are listening to WHFR 89.3 FM, and we are at the Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn, Michigan, making these radio waves. We're making waves for you to educate yourself on this particular program. And this program is pre-recorded, and you are listening to Aspet Kalchikyan, who is a professor at Bentley College in Massachusetts, and he's going to give us a lot of background on the Georgian people. And I am your host, Ned Apigyan, in a program entitled Then and Now, How History Affects Current Events. Okay, Aspet, if we can transfer to the next phase of this discussion, which primarily is what happens is we have three competing empires that collide with each other in the Caucasus, the Persian Empire from the west, the Tsarist Russian Empire from the north, the Turkish Ottoman Islamic Empire, like the Persians in the beginning were not Islamized yet. And give us some background as to how these three empires affected the Georgians and perhaps even the Armenians.
Right. We're absolutely right. I mean, the South Caucasus itself has been a battlefield at the beginning between the Byzantine Empire and the Persians, and then later on when the Russians came into the formula between the Ottomans and the Persians as well. And for the longest time, up until early 19th century, 1801, Georgia, unlike Armenia, kept its independence, mostly because of the fact that it was further north from Persia, and there was, there was an Armenia which didn't have any independent kingdom, but it had fighting forces, and it was basically a barrier against any advancement. But by 19th century, and because of the weakness of the Georgian kings, the Georgians had their golden age around 12th century, 13th century, under a queen named Tamara, who was able to unify again all the countries, all the kingdoms, and expand the kingdom of Georgia all the way to central Anatolia, including parts of Armenia and what is now today Azerbaijan and Armenia. Now, in early 19th century, what happened late 18th, early 19th century, the Georgian kings realized that they cannot resist the Persian onslaught or the Ottoman onslaught.
Right.
And they looked north, and there was a Russia. Russia was very much interested in expanding to the south, because of the warm waters on the Black Sea, because the Russian Navy, they didn't have a sea which didn't freeze during the winter. And realizing religion, thinking about it from a religion perspective, the Georgians realized that, okay, the Russians are Christians, so maybe they could help us. So they signed a deal with the Russians, where in the event that Georgia was to be attacked by the Persians or Ottomans or any other third force,
Russia, the Persians was, being in Armenia at that time.
At that time, yes, parts of Armenia. There were different shahs, there were different emirs, princes, independent princes, or and whatnot. And also, you have to realize that this is not a linear, not a continuous dynasties we're talking about. There has been a lot of back and forth play where the Persian Empire had expanded and retracted. The same with the Ottomans, and the same with, well, in the case of Russians, they always expanded up from 19th century and onwards. And the, what happened is that in 1801, actually in 1794-96, when the Persians invaded and razed Tbilisi, the capital city of Georgia, the Russians didn't help them, didn't help the Georgians. But what they did instead in 1801 is that a Russian army came into Georgia and annexed Georgia, thus ending an independent Georgian kingdom. Now, the remnants of these, it's very interesting to see all of these influences in the language, Georgian language. There are a lot of Turkish or Persian words in terms of architecture. If one visits Tbilisi, you'd see the different layers in history, how they are, you know, the mosques or the different buildings have been built by, you know, Islamic Ottoman or Safavid or Qajar sort of influence. But 1801 is the most important turning point in the collective Georgian psyche.
So, so it looks more Oriental than Armenia would.
Actually, no. It is. Well, you have to consider that Georgia, Armenia, is, especially Yerevan, is a newer city. So that's why most of the things that were built, the city itself, it was built in the 1920s, 30s.
That's
so
right.
With a modern,
that's right.
Modern style. In Georgia, actually, Georgia, because it was the seat of the viceroy, a Russian viceroy, it had a lot of European influence. There were many Georgian, many Germans, many Poles living in Tbilisi, and because it was an administrative center of the whole South Caucasus,
mm-hmm.
it was very developed. I remember the first time I went to Tbilisi. It was in December, in the winter, and I had a colleague of mine who was teaching, who was an American teaching in Armenia as well. So after we got into after we left Armenia, because in the winter the tufa stones that they use becomes gray mm-hmm. in the winter. We get to Tbilisi, and the word that he had was that his eyes were feasting because of with the colors. So Tbilisi is a very colorful and very layered city, which is a testament of its history as well.
So after a certain period, Russian influence in Georgia becomes predominant.
Of course, yes.
I know that in 1829, the Russians pretty much moved the Persians out of Armenia.
Yes, the last war between the Persians and the Russians, after which Russia became the replacement.
And then what year did the Russians influence Georgian history, where the Armenians and the Russians, I mean, the Armenians and the Georgians became Russified, so to speak, even to this day?
Well, that's one of the things. We have to also realize that both in the case of Georgia and Armenia, Georgians and Armenians, because they have had such a long history in terms of their mythology, in terms of their national identity, it was much more difficult for Russians to Russify them, both in terms of language, alphabet, in terms of traditions, and so on. The Russians did try that. It was a colonial policy. They tried that in with Ukrainians, with Belarus, and they were successful to a large extent. But in the case of Georgians and Armenians, they weren't that successful.
Well, how about the Azeris? People say there was no such thing until 1928.
The name itself, yes. The name itself did not exist up until 1918.
So who named this?
Well, when Russia collapsed in 1914. The countries in the region, they were called Tatars. They were called, usually in Russian census at that time, they would call them Muslims. They would call them Turks as an ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no word as Azeris, Azerbaijan. So when they became independent in 1918, they were discussing what language or what name to give to the country. One option was Azadistan, which means the land of the free. But eventually...
That's an Armenian word, though.
Pardon?
That's an Armenian word.
It's an
unless they
Persians use it as well.
Persians use it as well. Okay.
So again, this is one of the interesting things, and I think this is why we need to keep in mind that there is no such thing as distinct or pure concept. You know, these people have lived with each other for centuries. So, of course, the lines between them culturally, linguistically, are going to move. There's a large gray area.
If you're talking about these people culturally, the other day I was at a lecture here in Michigan sponsored by a Jewish group who was promoting their Jewish association or Israel with Turkey. And a cousin of mine turned around, looked at the people, and she said, well, these people look like Armenians. I said, what did you think they were going to look like?
Right.
So the question was, I mean, throughout the last 600 years, they took so many Greek, Armenian, Assyrian women. And so what happens is they tend to look alike. Now you go to Turkey, they say there's so many girls that look like they came from Sweden.
But well, in any again, event, this proves that there is no such thing as pure bred, whatever it is, Turk or an Armenian or a Georgian or an Arab or whatever. You know, this is a story of constant interaction.
Ethnically, if you were to look at an Azeri, you would know they would represent more of a relationship between the Turkic peoples, and their language and their ethnicity must be a lot more similar to the Turkic people of Central Asia and to Turkey,
right.
And the Armenians and Greeks and the Georgians are something else, or more akin
that.
To each other.
You could say that, but of course don't underestimate the fact that there were people living in what is now today Azerbaijan before the Turks invaded, before the Mongols invaded.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always that interaction as well. Actually, that part of the world used to be known as Albania, Caucasian Albania.
Yeah, I know that, and I always found that strange.
So it's, again, you can find mixes there, which is very sort of you wouldn't be able to characterize them as being Central Asian or what. But you're absolutely right. Language-wise, they are very much similar.
So let's, in the next 5 minutes or so, try to generalize this. When is it that they become, in my own understanding, I would say at the turn of the century, the 19th century, with these peoples, the Armenians and the Azeris and the Georgians, definitely see themselves as very important, distinct groups, no matter what you call themselves. But they have these minorities. I didn't realize the Laz and the Cherkas, you didn't mention them, how they fit into this. I didn't know that the Laz people related themselves more to the Georgians.
Well, I mentioned earlier that there were Laz people. There is a subdivision of Laz which are Muslim, actually.
Right.
There are mountain Druze as well in Azerbaijan. The region, one problem with politicians in general when it comes to policymakers, let's not
say. So it's pretty well all, it's mixed up very much.
They try to oversimplify things because it makes things much easier to analyze to make a policy. And here's what that's what makes the problem in terms of understanding all these nuances, make it possible for you to realize.
But the things you see in the news, for some reason, no matter all these differences, whether Circassians or Lazas, we see in Georgia, and eventually when we get to the part where Russians were peacekeepers in a war that predates the one we want to get to, you see a distinct area called Abkhazia and a distinct area called Ossetia, and you begin to wonder how different are these people. I thought perhaps they were Muslims, predominantly Muslim. The Russians decide to support one group over another. That's a political question. So you don't see much difference between them. Is that the general?
No, there isn't, actually. It's a matter of Russian policy, a colonial policy of divide and conquer. Russia would side with, would support one group against the other just to make sure that all the groups are reliant or dependent on Russia. They're actually in the case of the Georgians, there are Muslims and Christian Georgians. Among the Ossetians and among the Abkhazians, you have Christian and Muslims as well. But then they have a unifying factor as well. One Abkhaz scholar at some point said that the Abkhaz were 80% Christian, 20% Muslim, and 100% Tagan.
Tagan, what do you mean by that?
Meaning that they go beyond religion and they look back at the cultural and they look at a national belonging rather than a religious belongingness.
Would you say the Abkhazians are Russian-speaking?
No, or, they speak their language, of course. Everyone in different. Former Soviet space, they do speak Russian. But
right, I didn't mean it in that sense. I meant as their natural language.
Oh, no, as their first language, as their native language, they do speak Abkhaz.
I see, and it's different than Georgian.
It is similar but different, yes.
Similar but different. And the Ossetians, because we want to talk about that,
yes.
Is similar and different yet?
It's more different than similar to Georgians. It's closer to Iranian.
Oh, so the Ossetians are considerably different than the Abkhazians.
Yes.
Would you say their breakup of being Islamic versus Christian
no,
is
no
there,
factor at all. No,
no but what's
all.
The percentage? You said 80-20 for the Abkhaz.
Yes, in the case of the Ossetians, if you consider both South and North Ossetia, because there are two parts of Ossetia.
Right, that's a line somebody drew in the sand. I'm talking about them as a group. We want to get to that
right,
in the next
exactly.
Part.
Right, exactly. If you combine all of the South, all of the Ossetians together, most probably I would say anywhere between 15 to 20%, again, would be Muslim.
Okay, so the percentage of these two major groups within Georgia are primarily Christian, as opposed to being Muslim.
Yes.
There's, say, 75 to 80% Christian, mm-hmm. 15 to 20% Muslim. But that is not a big factor in their outlook.
No, not at all.
So that's an important issue. Whereas with the Azeris, they are 100% Muslim, and their religion is more important to them.
To a large extent, yes.
To a larger extent. Mm-hmm. The Armenians, who are neighbors, are exclusively Christian.
Correct.
And their religion is not so much the driving force, but to them, Christianity and Armenianism is rolled up into one ball.
Exactly.
But they're not really practicing Christians. You go to Armenia, and it's embarrassing to see the president of Armenia not even knowing how to cross himself correctly, which becomes
maybe
a joke.
Maybe that's the new way that they have to cross.
Well, it could be. So now in Azerbaijan or in Armenia, you don't have Abkhaz or Ossetians. There's a different geography defined by a piece of land, as I know from looking at the map.
Right, but there are Abkhaz and Ossetians living in Turkey, for instance, in northern Russia as well. There are some Abkhazians in Jordan, as far as Jordan in the Middle East.
Really?
Yeah. So it's a smaller diaspora, a very small group of people, but I wouldn't say exclusively there aren't, but it's very minuscule, very small number.
Yeah. Well, let me try to summarize this for our listening audience, not to get too confused. The purpose of Then and Now is to go into the history of these people to see what makes them slightly different, or their attitudes about each other, or what are they based on, whether it's based on religion, whether it's based on geography. And we're finding out that these peoples have been living with each other for a pretty long time, and they've changed with the centuries. And we're learning that the Georgians were the second group of people, along with the Armenians, who were the first to adopt Christianity. And we're learning we need to have a little discussion of the competition between the Turkic Muslim Empire and the Persian Muslim Empire in the 19th century, not the Persians of the 9th century. I mean, the second or third or fourth or fifth century AD, and the Russians, how these competing empires had a major effect on these peoples. Would you like to say something about that before we go to our half-hour break?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yes. Pardon, can you repeat the last part? Sorry.
Well, the idea that we have three major mm-hmm. competing empires.
Right.
How did their competition there affect the fact that Georgians think of themselves as Georgians? One group, the Russians, might have been, they identified more with them because they were Christians. The Armenians also identified a lot with the Russians because they were Christian.
Right.
But they were dominated at one time by the Persian Empire,
right.
And by 1829, the liberation of Eastern Armenians were related
yeah.
to Russia. The up to the Crimean War, I guess the Turks were pretty much pushed out of the South Caucasus.
That's definitely one aspect, one way of looking at it, especially in the case of Armenia, because Georgians had, unlike Georgia, Armenia lost its kingdom, independent kingdom,
earlier,
in what is now today Armenia, around 11th century. Now, Georgians, however, continued to have an independent kingdom up until 19th century, and from their perspective...
So that's a big difference. That's important
to
know.
And they have a memory, their living memory, up until, let's say, I mean, it's closer, or recent memory. They look back at that time, and they would look at the Russians as conquerors rather than saviors. What was savior for Armenia is not necessarily the same for the Georgians.
But they needed that savior when they were competing with the Turks or the Persians.
They needed, but they didn't need an occupation. They look at it as an occupation rather than an agreement between two equals.
Okay.
And this is perhaps psychologically the deep end of the problem between Georgians and Russians, where the Georgians always feel that they've been neglected, or they know Russia does not treat them equally,
okay,
or Russia does not view them as an equal.
Well, it's time for us to have another station break, and you can take a long, deep breath. And I'll let our listening audience know you are listening to a pre-recorded program. The program is named Then and Now. I am your host, Ned Apigyan, and our guest today is none other than Professor Aspet Kochikyan. And you are listening to the radio station of the Henry Ford Community College, located in Dearborn, Michigan. And you are listening to us on 89.3 FM on your dial. And if you want to listen to us on the internet, you can tune us in at whfr.fm, and you can hear us around the world, and especially on the fourth Saturday. I'm on the air on Friday, but not with this program. You would hear me on the fourth Friday of every month, no, the fourth Saturday, let me correct myself, from 10 to 11 a.m. on the internet. And I think we're podcasting these programs, which means you can go in and listen to them at any time if you're energetic, figure out how to do it. I can't, certainly. And anyway, let's get back to the third part of our program, which is how I defined it with you. And that is the Sovietization period, quickly from the turn of the century. Then we had the Transcaucasian government, which unfortunately the Turks decided to join the Germans during the First World War. And then after the First World War, as I understand it, the Germans supported the Georgians in the Transcaucasian Federation. Didn't last long, the joining of these three republics against the Turks. And eventually, these three republics lost their independence to the Bolshevik Revolution. Would you like to say something briefly about all that? And then you're going to devote the next 10 minutes to the Soviet period, how it affected these nationalities. What did that do to the Abkhazians and the Ossetians in Georgia, and the Armenians in Georgia, and the Armenians in Armenia? How did all these things affect each other? You could say a sentence or two before World War One, or two about the First World War, and then we'll primarily devote our time, before we get into the more recent conflicts, the last 15 minutes of the program.
Sure. You have to realize that the beginning of the 20th century was a time of revival in terms of nationalism among smaller groups which were living under empires, including the Georgians and Armenians, as well as many of the Central European and East European people, the Czechs, the Slovaks, the Hungarians, not so much, but many Poles and so on. So it was around that time that there were ideas of independence. Now, when the war started in 1914, the Russian army was making advancements against the Ottomans in Anatolia. But then with the Bolshevik Revolution, when the army collapsed and they withdrew, there was a vacuum. So what happens is that the three independent or the three nationalities in that part of the world, the Georgians, the Armenians, and the Azeris,
decided to form
a unified government, the Transcaucasian government, central government based in Tbilisi. And by 1918, it was a short-lived arrangement because they realized that their national interests lay in different places. So the Georgians realized that they need to find a language or they need to find an agreement with the Axis power, with Germany at the time, and they declared their independence. The Azeris already had the Turks, the Ottomans, as their supporters, and the Armenians didn't have anyone, so they were left out in the cold.
And primarily did all the fighting against the Turks during this period.
Yes, up until the end of the war in 1918, or even 1919.
With Sovietization, I assume the Red Army went to Georgia and took care in. I don't know that history as well. Did they turn over the republic to the Bolsheviks like the Armenian government did?
No, in the Red Army, after winning the civil war in Russia,
right.
and the Soviets and the Bolsheviks managed to consolidate their power. First thing they did is advanced over Azerbaijan. They took over Azerbaijan. There was a British expeditionary force at that time which withdrew. They didn't put up any fight.
The Dunsterville issue. Are you familiar with that one?
Pardon?
Dunsterville, a major Dunsterville, had a campaign in that part of the world. I don't know if he had anything to do with it at that time. Anyway, that's not important. Let's get back to you.
And then the next major, the next country was Armenia, which basically was fighting on two fronts between Turkey, on the Turkish front and the Russian front. So they chose the lesser of two evils, so they handed over government to the Russians, to the Bolsheviks.
Okay.
And then eventually the last government was the Georgian government.
They had to fight them, unlike Armenia, they didn't turn the government over?
No. They fought until the end, and eventually the Soviet army, the Red Army, occupied Georgia, and the three countries became Soviet. Actually, one thing that we need
when
to keep in mind
when did they become Sovietized? We know Armenia was 1921.
21, yes.
December.
Right.
How about Georgia?
Well, 1920, it's usually 1920, November 1920, you would look at it as November, because of the old calendar and the new calendar, but the Georgian...
So Armenia was Sovietized on the Georgian calendar in November 1920.
Yes.
And Georgia when?
Was in early 1921, February or March 1921.
So not that much later.
No. It was very much successive. And what the Georgians did, what the Russians did actually, they created an entity. It wasn't the Soviet Armenian Soviet Socialist Republic or the Georgian Soviet Socialist Republic. Between 1922 and 1936, there was an entity called Transcaucasian Socialist Federative Soviet Republic.
Meaning all three?
All three together.
I see.
And it was only in 1936 that these countries, they divided it administratively and created the Soviet republics of Georgia, Armenia, and Azerbaijan.
Oh, that's right, because there was a new constitution in the Soviet Union
right.
in 1936,
exactly.
as I remember.
Exactly.
So that was part of that game they were playing.
Yes.
Okay, well, so during this Soviet period, did the Russians or the Bolshevik powers in Abkhazia and Ossetia, were they treated differently by the communist regime?
Well, different, yes, but in a positive way. Because what happened is that there were many, affirmative action plans done in Abkhazia, and especially in Abkhazia, where there were universities opened to teach some of the languages in local languages. In Abkhazian, that is, rather than Georgian, because if you were an Abkhaz living in Abkhazia, you needed to get higher education. You had to go to Tbilisi and learn Georgian to graduate with a degree. But then under Soviet control, especially in the 1970s, actually, what happened is that there were many universities opened in Abkhazia, or a branch of Tbilisi University was opened in Abkhazia to be able to teach the Abkhaz in their own language. And also, one of the other things about the disproportionate power that, at least in the case of Abkhazia, that they had, was that the Abkhaz made up only about 18 to 20% of the population in total population of Abkhazia. So they were 20% in Abkhazia. Themselves.
They were a minority in their own area called Abkhazia.
Exactly. The majority were the Georgians, about 45%. Then there were the
Russians. That's why they feel like Abkhazia is part of Georgia.
Well, of course. And historically, they haven't been that different.
How about in Ossetia?
Ossetia was a bit different, mostly because of the fact that the status of Ossetia was different. Abkhazia was an autonomous Soviet Socialist Republic within Georgia, whereas Ossetia was an autonomous region, autonomous oblast.
I was going to say that word. What was the Russian word of oblast? What did that mean?
Region.
Oh, it means a Russian word for region.
Yes, it's sort of an autonomous region. So,
they didn't do anything.
On the level of autonomy, you had the Union republics, Soviet, like Georgia, Armenia, and so on.
So to clarify this point, because we need to get to the... is that within the region of Abkhazia and Ossetia, which is the primary reason for this recent military action between the two of them, there was one a couple of years ago where the Russians became peacekeepers for the European Union, as I understand it, or what is that? OCS?
OSCE.
OSC, what the initials stand for.
Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe?
Yes, yes, yes. That's what I was trying to get at, as opposed to European Union. I want to get into that, what happened then, so that you realize that, before we go into what happened this past August.
Right.
So within these two autonomous regions within Georgia, the Georgians were a majority in both of these autonomous regions, in spite of the fact the two areas were called Abkhazia and Ossetia, and the total population of those of the Ossetians and the Abkhazians, which the two areas are not contiguous, they're separated from one another, their total population in Georgia would be what? Approximately something less than 10%.
Yes, much less than 10%.
Much less, 8% of both minority groups. However, as a minority group, they had two geographic regions associated with them, even though they were not a majority in each one of those regions.
Yeah. Actually, in South Ossetia region, the Abkhaz actually had some kind of a majority, the Ossetians, pardon, had a plurality, a majority.
How did, why did Ossetia get divided into north and south, and north falling itself in Russia and south falling itself in Georgia?
Well, that is something which should remain or will remain one of the biggest
mysteries
of life. But I mean, this is one of the things about the Soviet
because
Soviet
that's what allows the Russians to stick their nose in what the Georgians
exactly.
are doing.
That's one thing. They didn't want to create a strong Ossetia. They didn't want to unite both countries, so they put them each of them under different administrative rule.
So when Georgia got divided, did it get divided on the same property, on the same borders the Soviet borders had, or were they changed?
No.
Virtually
no.
The same, because I know Armenia didn't change.
No, borders haven't changed. I mean, the borders that we have today, international borders between Georgia and
Russia and the rest of the world,
are the borders which were drawn by the Soviets, by the Russians,
when
all of this was part of the Soviet Union.
I see. So North Ossetia was included in Russia at the time they were dividing their original line.
Right.
Okay.
And you also have, I mean, North Ossetia, also you have, you know, other regions next to it. You have the Chechnya, you have Dagestan, you have the Kabardino-Balkar area.
Okay, now the Chechens, let's talk about that because that's in the news. The Chechens are primarily an Islamic people.
Yes, they are a Sunni Muslim group.
But ethnically, what are they?
Ethnically, they are Chechens. They belong to a North Caucasian group of people.
Another North Caucasian group of people and who Islamized them? The Turks?
Over different times, yes. Either mostly the Turks, because they're.
But how did they get that far north? That was the mystery.
You have a lot of influence. Again, this is one of the things that they didn't have to control them. They didn't have to have actual control because you have a lot of interaction. And people might have realized that a tribal leader might have said, well, it seems that Islam seems more in tune with the lifestyle that we have. Maybe we should turn to Islam. And eventually, that's how they developed.
Well, what happened
now?
We're running out of time. We got about 10 minutes. We want to discuss post-independence from the Soviet Union.
Right.
And then leave a little time as to what happened a couple of years ago when we had this war where the Russians supported the Abkhazians. What was that about? What brought that all on? Because then they became peacekeepers, and in August, the Georgians did a foolish thing in Ossetia, decided that they were going to intercede into this peacekeeping realm that the Russians had established. Could you deal with that? We want to go to that point.
Okay.
Because that brings us to the current events part, and the whole point of this is to have some background as to why we have these problems.
Right. Well,
so the post-breakup of the Soviet Union.
In 1989, when there was a wave of nationalism going all over the Soviet Union, the Georgians were basically demanding independence. And they elected, they boycotted the elections in the Soviet Union at the time, and they had their own separate elections, saying that we were going to secede from the Soviet Union.
And the Armenians did just the opposite. They said, "We just want you to attach the part of Azerbaijan to Armenia. We're not interested in leaving the Soviet Union."
Right. Exactly. And what happened is that in Georgia at the time, they elected someone by the name of Zviad Gamsakhurdia, who was the first president of Georgia. He was a very populist, nationalist leader. Now, when he was elected with 86% of the votes, actually, a very popular person. And one of the problems he had, though, is that he looked at the Russians and the Soviet regime as an oppressive regime, as a colonizers, and he blamed them for the creation of this weak Georgia. And he said that he's going to reconnect Abkhazia and South Ossetia, because at that time, they had also declared their independence from Georgia. And what ensued was a war, actually, between the Georgians on the one hand and the Abkhaz and the Ossetians on the other. Now, it was during this time.
What year was this?
1989, 1990.
Before the breakup of the Soviet Union.
Yes. It was around that time. That basically the Russians, because they didn't like what Gamsakhurdia was saying and calling them names and so on, they supported the Abkhaz and they supported the South Ossetians.
Okay.
Now, this continued. Eventually, Gamsakhurdia was ousted in a civil war. He escaped to Chechnya. He committed suicide. Some people say he was assassinated there. But then came another person by the name of Edward Shevardnadze, who was the foreign minister of Gorbachev.
Of the Soviet Union.
Of the Soviet Union. And before that, he was actually the secretary general, the first secretary of the Communist Party of Georgia in the 70s. He ruled Georgia as the Communist Party chairman. And when he came in, there was a still civil war going on. The Georgians didn't have their army. And Shevardnadze said, okay, he made a deal with the Russians. He said, now we need to, I need your help. If you can help me bring the country under my control, then what I'll do is I will enroll Georgia. I will become a member of this Commonwealth of Independent States, which
CSI,
was the post-Soviet federation that the Russians were using, an organization to control all of the countries. Georgia was not a member of that.
All right. This predates the squabble before the one in August. Let's
get
to that
one. Oh, yeah.
This is,
I'm talking about, 94.
Because we have about
94. And the Russians actually sent in troops, and they actually supported the Georgian government, the central government of Shevardnadze. Meanwhile, when there were skirmishes between the Georgian army and the Abkhaz on the one hand and the South Ossetians on the other, eventually there was an agreement. There was a dialogue or a peace agreement. Not even a peace agreement, but the Russians basically said, why don't we send a CIS, Commonwealth of Independent State Peacekeeping Forces?
Ah.
That's what they were called, CIS.
It was a CIS, okay, not a Russian republic.
But it happened that who's going to send army? I mean, at the beginning, there were some Central Asian republics. They sent a couple of people, but eventually the CIS Peacekeeping Forces became Russian Peacekeeping Forces. And they were nothing but peacekeeping forces.
Up till August, they were the same group.
Yes, yes. They were under the guise of peacekeepers from in the CIS peacekeepers.
Okay, what was the problem before this past August, a couple of years before that?
The problem was that the Georgian government, the central authorities, after the Rose Revolution in 2003-2004...
The Rose Revolution that they had.
Yes, the Rose Revolution in Tbilisi, which
predated the one in
Shevardnadze and brought in Saakashvili.
Right, which predated the one in the Orange Revolution in the Ukraine.
Yes. And the central authorities in Tbilisi actually wanted to get their control back in Abkhazia and South Ossetia. And every time there were skirmishes, and it was also an attempt to show that Georgia is able to stand up against Russia. And this is one of the reasons why it's eventually escalated. The conflict escalated, or the skirmishes escalated into a full-blown war, which the Georgians weren't expecting. I mean, if you look at the last 5 years or 4 years, you would see that almost every
year. So they had a war
year,
with whom? With the Russians? That wouldn't be a fair match.
Yeah, of course. And
a war with the Ossetians analyst, and
I mean,
the Abkhazians.
The Georgians and the Russians were playing a game of chicken where the Georgians were on a bicycle and the Russians were in a tank. So, of course, the Russians are not going to swing. They're not going to, you know, push aside. So this is one of the biggest problems that existed. The Georgians always relied on the West, thinking that they are very important to the West.
Now, right. So what year was this, when this comes to an end?
What year?
In 2008,
right.
Before we got to that, what was the year that this situation was? 3 or 4 years before then, we have the Russian CSI, formerly CSI, now Russian peacekeepers in South Ossetia, but not in Abkhazia.
No,
right?
you had them. You had Russian forces, both in Abkhazia and South Ossetia, from 1994 up until today.
Okay, that's the date I was looking for. I wasn't sure. 1994 till 2008.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The present president of Georgia, what did he do in August that really irked the Russians? Everybody thinks he did a stupid thing, a foolish thing, and that's what the American audience needs to hear. Because regular news says the Russians attacked Georgia. The question is, what brought it on? And that's the story I want you to say.
Well, this is the thing that it's important to look back and see what was the trend in the last 4 or 5 years. You always had events or attempts by the Georgian to reassert their control over South Ossetia and Abkhazia. Now, what happened is that I think this was the last straw for the Russians. First of all, I don't think that the Georgians expected the Russians would overreact. Second, it was a time of the Beijing Olympic Games opening ceremonies, and they thought that maybe the world might not be paying attention.
What were they hoping to accomplish?
They were hoping, I think, Saakashvili, one of the things you have to also relate to is the domestic dynamics, political dynamics in Georgia itself. Saakashvili in the last year or so has been losing popularity. He is not the popular president that he was during the Rose Revolution. And many people have been abandoning him, his former colleagues and so on, and forming opposition and criticizing him for not doing what he was supposed to do.
Okay, we got 3 minutes to make some sense out of what happened in August.
Right. And what happened is that I think he was using that weakness, or he was using a foreign policy success, any success, to translate into a domestic politics, into a success into domestic politics. So that's why he reacted. I think that's why one of the reasons why he was trying to make headway or try to gain ground in South Ossetia.
So he thought he was going to push the Russians out of South
Ossetia? No, I don't think he thought that. But he thought that maybe if he achieves, he manages to force more favorable terms on the South Ossetians, he might be looked upon as a savior or as a hero and so on.
So by having an artillery barrage against civilians in South Ossetia and against... this is the way he thought he was going to do this?
Well, you should know this better than I, but I think in times of war, human life doesn't cost anything. No matter how activist we are and how valuable human life is, people don't think about the cost of human life because they look at it as a bargaining chip, both on the Russian side or the Georgian side.
But this primarily happened in Ossetia. He didn't
stick his nose
in Abkhazia. What did the Abkhazians do when
nothing.
This happened? Nothing.
Actually, that's one of the things. And the Abkhazians actually were very careful not to get into the problem and get into the fight themselves.
So the Russians, I think what this guy thought he was going to do is get American support that he could do whatever he want and the Americans would stand by him.
Yes,
and then
this is
instead,
the problem that the West...
The Russians decided to invade Georgia and cause the...
Well, there are two things that we need to
keep
in mind.
They went beyond Ossetia.
The first thing is that the West, especially the U.S., has not been clear enough to tell Georgia how important or how unimportant Georgia is for us, for the U.S.
I see.
So that's one of the things. The second thing is that recently Russia had a change
of power.
So we
have less than a minute for you to wind up with some important conclusion to
right.
all this.
And in the case of Russia, there was a change of government, change of leadership. And I think this is one of the other reasons why Russia overreacted, to show that even though Putin is not in power anymore, although he is in power behind the scenes, the new president was going to act as tough as Putin. So by doing so, I think the problem is now these were the two major problems that the Georgians didn't calculate, or the West, or the world didn't look at. And eventually what happened is that because of those miscalculations, today you have a situation where both South Ossetia and Abkhazia have been recognized as independent states by Russia and by Nicaragua, by the way, as in support of Russia. And you have a situation where, whereas in August or early August, people would have thought that there might have been a chance for South Ossetia and Abkhazia to have some kind of a deal with Georgia for the future, I think at this point, all hope is gone.
Okay.
Georgia is completely fragmented, and Saakashvili, President Saakashvili, is completely isolated.
I thank you very much. I hope this made some sense to our listening audience, and it was a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much, Ned.
Our pleasure.
Have been listening to Then and Now, a pre-recorded program brought to you from 10 to 11 a.m. on the fourth Saturday of every month as a part of our talk show format entitled the WHFR Forum. Then and Now is a program primarily devoted to how history affects current events by your host, Ned Apigian, on WHFR 89.3 FM, making waves from the campus of Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn, Michigan. You can also hear this program on the World Wide Web at www.whfr.fm. Thank you.
You're listening to 89.3 WHFR Dearborn. We're bringing you non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College. Good morning. My name is Bill Keith. It is a pleasure to be here with you this morning on what's turned out to be a frigid cold day. Boy, after these last few days of a little bit of warming, I thought, boy, it'd be nice to be in the upper 20s, low 30s for a good chunk of time this winter. And then it hit us. Here's some music from Woven Hand.